It's Hawaii Public Radio, All Things Considered, Helping Hand, and I'm Dave Lawrence. Fridays, we put the spotlight on an organization, topic, or event that helps the disabled or the most vulnerable, and today the latter is our focus, and it's an animal, one that's been called the most vulnerable creature on the planet due to a threat with roots in Asia. It's the rhinoceros, now facing a rapidly growing extinction crisis of poaching, largely based on demand for its horn in Vietnam and China, despite scientists and doctors around the world who have said that rhino horn has no medicinal or other value, except to the animals it's violently stolen from. Some say it began 8 years ago, fueled by an internet and word-of-mouth rumor that rhino horn cured a Vietnamese government minister of cancer. That unfounded rumor created massive demand and raised the price of the horn to levels exceeding even gold. To put it in perspective, there's been a 6,000% increase in rhino poaching since 2007. In a significant recent move, the South African government said they will not change their position against its trade, relief to many rhino advocates who say it would only increase demand for what is essentially keratin, the same thing our hair and fingernails are made of. Our guest today is a nonprofit with a unique plan: translocate rhinos from South Africa to Australia. Ray Dearlove is the founder of the Australian Rhino Project. Born and raised in South Africa, in the late 1980s, he emigrated to Australia. After a successful career working in IT, in 2013, he founded the Australian Rhino Project, which now has backing from both the Australian and South African governments, as well as significant conservation figures like Jane Goodall. We'll learn more as we welcome the Australian Rhino Project and Ray Dearlove to HPR and Helping Hand. Thank you very much, Ray.
My pleasure, Dave, and thank you so much for the opportunity.
You're very welcome. And perhaps to start, you can clarify the urgency.
Oh, look, up until, as you said, 2007, it wasn't something that we even considered, but things definitely have changed. In 2007, 13 or 17 were poached. Last year, it was 1,336. And the previous year, 1,215, and the previous year, 1,006. And we really believe that those numbers are understated because they don't find all the carcasses. Do they count the calves? And that brings one to what they call a tipping point. So when the kill rate of the rhinos exceeds the birth rate, then you've got a problem. And particularly since the rhino has a gestation period of about 16 months, they only drop one calf at a time. The incidence of twins is not known at all. And the female or the cow is ready again in between 3 and 4 years. So you can imagine that when you get behind on the birth rate versus the killing rate, it is a major issue. And there are a lot of people, and I'm one of them, who believe that that tipping point has been reached.
Looking at the recent interview you did with the Washington Post, which features a stunning graph displaying the kill rate, it certainly seems that's the case. Explain your plan.
3 years ago, almost to the day, I had a call from a chap with whom I had worked at IBM in South Africa, and he suggested starting up a breeding herd of rhinos in Australia because climatically and from a vegetation point of view, it would seem to be a good fit. All the traditional methods look to be failing. I'll just give you a specific example, if I may. Everybody knows Warren Buffett, the Buffett family. Well, Howard Buffett, Warren's son, he donated $25 million to the National Parks anti-poaching, which is admirable and fantastic. But here's the thing, Dave. The numbers have gone up. And not for 1 minute, Dave, do I believe that what we're doing here will save the rhino. But there can be, in my humble opinion, that in 5-10 years' time, there's a strong breeding herd with genetic diversity here in Australia, so that if the wheels fall off completely in Africa, when they come back on, we can actually help reseed any populations that might be there. That's the grand plan. I would rather not be doing this if it was not necessary. I mean, it's a critical situation.
So your plan calls for 80 rhinos to be moved, but with 2 to 3 of them poached daily, which means they're shot several times, usually still alive as a chunk of their head is sawed off, remaining alive for days in some sort of unimaginable pain, often a now orphaned baby by their side, traumatized, sometimes even injured, trying to defend its mom, why not move a lot more?
Dave, firstly, thank you for sharing that with me. And look, I appreciate it in terms of getting emotional, because I can hear that in your voice. That's how I get, I mean, I'm moved to tears. There was a recent one where these so-and-sos shot 2 cows dead. There were 2 orphans just standing next to them because they don't know what's going on. And they also shot the bull. And they took the bull's face off, but he survived, just like you said. And because they've got a drink every day, he made his way to a waterhole and they found him submerged in the waterhole dead. I mean, it's just a bloody awful thing. So why not more? It's a very expensive exercise, Dave. The animals, and you know this, your listeners may not, is that a large size rhino will weigh 2,500 kilos, and that's a damn big animal. And that's one aspect, is just the cost of getting them here. The other thing is that there is a sensitivity in South Africa about the fact that the world seems to think that they can't manage the issue, and they're doing a lot to try and manage the issue. It's an economical thing more than anything else, and I'm hoping to overcome that with the support of people like yourself and your listeners. The other thing, that which is a really important point here in Australia is absolutely neurotic about biosecurity. It's an island, so they protect what comes in that won't contaminate. So we are put through the ringer making sure that our animals don't present any form of danger or risk.
You've said that it's 75 grand to move each rhino. If you got more financial support, could you increase the total number of rhinos you plan on moving to a much higher number?
Unquestionably. I really appreciate all this research you've done. It makes a massive difference. But I was asked, so Ray, why are you doing this? And I said, if you or I don't do something about it, who is going to do something about it? I think a lot of people care, Dave, but then they move on to the next thing in their lives. It's very few who actually step up. And Mr. Buffett is clearly one who has said, let's do something about this. And you would hope that 25 million would make a difference. And I'm sure it has in a fashion. But it certainly hasn't brought the numbers down, which at the end of the day, that and the demand issue are the key issues in this thing.
How does your plan move forward next?
The next major step is for the Australian government to go and inspect the quarantine facilities in South Africa. And that's good, because if you can make sure there's no issues before they get in the aeroplane, better still. They then come to Australia, by the way, and also go into quarantine for a period, which will probably be 2 to 3 months.
Is the facility in South Africa, the quarantine, is it built and up and ready for your Australian officials to inspect?
Yes, it is. And it's a very impressive setup. They're ready to go. They're waiting for us to get the go-ahead from the government.
Also worth mentioning, there's a real danger for the folks trying to protect them.
The personal security of the people who are trying to defend or protect those animals is growing kind of on an exponential basis.
If these poaching numbers can't be brought down, there's no way you're going to return those rhinos to South Africa. You keep them in Australia, right?
Yes. I mean, we kind of hope and pray that they will sort this out and international crime syndicates will move on to the next target. We discussed this in our board meetings, and it'll have to be a meeting of the minds between whoever's going to take the rhinos back and ourselves to make sure that it is safe. And I don't see that in the foreseeable future. I really don't, Dave. I mean, I can't see anything that'll change this except political will. So if the president of South Africa and the president of Mozambique and the president of Vietnam and the president of China, you know, all sit around the table and say, look, we're going to stop this nonsense and mean it, I think it's going to continue.
How about the South African government? Are they resistant to the plan or are they supportive?
No, they're supportive. They'd rather it wouldn't happen, as we all would, but they understand and they're supportive. Dave, I'm talking to you here from Sydney, you're in Hawaii, and it's a global issue. And unless it's addressed globally, it will never resolve.
In the massive Kruger National Park, where most of the rhinos are and most of the poaching happens, right up on the border with Mozambique, are there even fences?
No, there's no fences. But with Mr. Buffett's money, I know that they're trying to create an area within Kruger, which will be like a Fort Knox, but there's no fences, and hence the poachers come across the border tonight, and they risk their lives with lions, leopards, elephants, snakes, rangers.
The orphaned rhino, is that also part of the new phenomenon? The organization Care for Wild Africa, I've sort of been paying attention to, Petronelle.
Yes, she's a wonderful lady, though.
Is that something that's emerged as a sort of necessity to look after the babies?
100%. 100%. And on Monday, I'm actually going to one, and I'm seeing Petronelle the following week. So exactly right. If anything was going to touch your heart, when you hear a little baby rhino cry, it's just like hearing a child cry. Well, the rhinos get airlifted, and the rangers may just sedate it, and they put it in a helicopter, and they take it to Petronelle's place. She has a lot of volunteers working with her. Interestingly, the volunteers pay her to do the job, which I think is a very creative way of paying for what she does. And these volunteers will sleep with this little orphan to give it a feeling that it's its mother. I mean, it's just, what, as you said, has the world come to this kind of stuff is required. I mean, Jesus, is there a necessity for it? Or why is it necessary?
People pay to look after an animal whose mom was executed.
Yeah.
It's really heartbreaking. Folks can go to theaustralianrhinoproject.org where they can make a contribution, learn more about the crisis, also share your information on social media. And is there anything else you want to put out there in terms of a call to action from our listeners?
Oh, look, fundraising is critical. And we do, by the way, have an arrangement with an organization in the U.S. where your donors will get a tax deductibility, so that should make a huge difference.
This is a nonprofit in both the U.S. and Australia.
That's right, and we've got that in the U.S. as well, so that's a benefit to your listeners. The funding for our project comes from fundraising and running events. I do this full-time because I want to do it and I believe in it. I don't get paid for it.
My boss sent him a couple of articles about you, my general manager. He's from England, believe it or not. Michael Titterton is his name. He was very impressed with you. At HawaiiPublicRadio.org, you can find this interview, full-length interview, all their contact information, and all of our other Helping Hand guests. It's Ray Dearlove, the Australian Rhino Project.
Really enjoyed speaking to you, Dave. I appreciate your interest and your passion, and it's people like you who can make this thing turn a dream into reality.
You never know, it might just spark an idea with somebody with means and a big heart out there who loves animals. We'll talk again soon, I hope.
I will do. Look after yourself.